mike.net.
Hello, I'm Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson, and I'm joined as always from Tallahassee by Gannett State Capitol reporter John Kennedy. Hey, John.
Hello, Zach.
Well, President Donald Trump visited Florida to bask in the glory of America's return to manned spaceflight, but had to take a rain check. Governor Ron DeSantis appointed two new state Supreme Court justices, and the state budget could be trimmed after tax revenues took a big hit in April. We'll talk about all that and more, but first, what that music means, it's time for some number picking. John, did you come prepared with a number this week?
Zach, I've come in large. My number is 54,208.
54,208. You think that's big, John? Really? Come on, man. My number this week is 2.7 million.
Whoa, there million. You go.
Yeah, come on, man. We're talking millions here. So that's 54,208 for John, 2.7 million for me. Remember those numbers, folks. Write them down. We'll tell you what they mean in Florida politics at the end of the show. Well, the launch of the first manned space flight from American soil in nearly a decade would have been a welcome reprieve from 3 months of darkness and coronavirus gloom, but an iffy weather forecast forced the launch to be delayed. NASA will take another shot on Saturday, but whether the launch happens now or later, having the Kennedy Space Center, one of Florida's iconic institutions, in the national spotlight was a positive thing for a state that has taken a lot of abuse during the coronavirus crisis for images of crowded beaches and spring break revelers. The revival of the space program also gives President Donald Trump something to boast about and allows him to change the subject from his coronavirus response, which has been widely criticized. Trump traveled to Florida Wednesday for the launch. Early in the day, his campaign put out an email declaring that Trump is making space great again. On the same day that the Kennedy Space Center was back in the news, another Florida icon, Disney World, announced that it planned to reopen on July 11th. John, Florida is pretty critical to Trump's success in November, and getting the state back to some sense of normalcy could be a big boost for him. Nothing says normal in Florida like crowds at Disney and a bustle of activity at Cape Canaveral. Trump's been trailing in the Florida polls. Do you think a successful rocket launch could give his political ambitions a boost as well?
I know. It seems the president thinks that the SpaceX launch will help. We have a new rocket man. And you used to think that it was only North Korea's Kim Jong-un, but President Trump liked launches too. So there he goes. But it's certainly a reminder of, maybe better times, especially along Florida's Space Coast, which was hit hard economically by the retirement of the space shuttle and is hoping the new privately financed SpaceX can help spur this activity, including even tourism, with people coming to watch the launch, just like the president. Surprisingly, former U.S. Senator Bill Nelson, a Democrat, he flew in space aboard the Columbia's space shuttle. He was quoted as saying, "There is an excitement at the Cape that you have not seen since the space shuttle was flying." So maybe the president gets a short-term boost in must-win Florida if the launch does eventually go off, given that Democrat Joe Biden seems to be holding a lead in Florida polls. That gives him just slightly outside the margin edge over the president right now. But the president would be happy to take any kind of nudge that the space launch might bring him.
Yeah, and I think it would have, maybe instilled some faith in people and in America's scientific expertise. That's taken a bit of a hit during this coronavirus pandemic as we've struggled to get testing ramped up and do some of the containment measures that are needed to get this under control. It was interesting too that Disney, on the same day as this aborted space launch, Disney announced that they were planning to reopen. I mean, both as I mentioned, both Disney and the Kennedy Space Center are really two of the biggest icons in Florida. It does seem like things are starting to return to normal a little bit. How important is that? I mean, it seems like DeSantis and Trump are really staking, the presidential race here in Florida on this idea that the state can reopen safely, and things will be starting to return to normal here in this critical swing state by the time November rolls around. Getting Disney World back operating, do you think that could be another big boost?
Well, that is, you know, a giant employer across Central Florida, obviously. So that also has the implication that it will help that really badly hit economy. The worst unemployment in the state was in Osceola County, right in Disney's backyard. So if any kind of effort to sort of stabilize this dramatic downturn in the economy can be made, the president is going to benefit somewhat by it. The governor is going to obviously try to cheerlead for the president going forward. There does seem to be a factor as to where people are going to vote in this presidential election is just how they personally feel. Do they feel better about the stability of the state and the nation going forward, or do they feel very unmoored right now by what has happened? At this moment in time, it seems like there are a lot of people that don't feel good about the direction of the country and don't feel very good about their own personal finances or position. So that's something the president, in trying to get a reelection going, is clearly trying to turn around as a national mindset in a way. So, you know, indeed, a way to start doing that is to start bringing back certain things that we feel very accustomed to as a really part of a normalcy. And I guess, you know, Disney World and space launches in Florida are part of that whole landscape.
Sure. And, the ultimate factor in whether all this, how this affects the election is probably going to be, how successful it is. I mean, if Disney World reopens and you have a lot of coronavirus cases that are tied to big crowds at Disney World, I mean, that's not a positive. That could be a negative. That people will say that, things reopened too quickly, or that there wasn't proper safety precautions in place. So a lot of it depends on how successful this reopening is and how much they're able to do it without increasing the amount of virus transmissions here. Well, as Trump was touting a return to glory for America's space program this week, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis also got a break from coronavirus coverage when he traveled to Miami to announce two new state Supreme Court justices. The two justices replace two other DeSantis court picks who were tapped by Trump for federal judgeships, so they don't alter the partisan balance on the court. They're two GOP picks replacing two other GOP picks, but they're still noteworthy because of the youth and diversity that they bring to the court. John, tell us about them.
Yeah, the pandemic has dominated the news for so long now that the vacancies on the Florida Supreme Court had sort of fallen from everyone's attention. But these two openings emerged when Justices Robert Luck and Barbara Lagoa left in December to take positions as federal appellate judges. The seven-member Supreme Court has been operating sort of like the Tampa Bay Lightning when they've got a couple of guys in the penalty box. The court is only operating remotely right now anyway, so everything is on a little bit of a low beam. But the new justices are Renatha Francis, a Palm Beach County Circuit Judge, only 10 years out of law school, and John Coryell, a Miami lawyer who, like the governor, is a Harvard Law School grad. Both are young, 42 years old, so they could serve on the court for a while, although no one serves a lifetime appointment. And frankly, younger justices tend to face, the added pressures of finances and also, family interests. So sometimes they don't really last as long as you might think they do. Coryell is Hispanic, and he becomes the third Hispanic on the court. But Frances, she is a native of Jamaica, Black, and fills what has been something of a void left on the court when the only Black justice, Peggy Quince, retired after 20 years, just as DeSantis came into office. In his first round of Supreme Court selections, DeSantis didn't appoint a Black justice. So the court, for the first time in 36 years, had no Black member for the past year and a half. Parenthetically, DeSantis got these early picks for the court because of three retirements just as he took office. So he was able to quickly start putting his imprint on that court. But But, you know, Frances, you know, symbolically is important. She, a black member on that court. She also, though, can't be seated until September because the state constitution requires that justices be members of the Florida bar for 10 years. And she didn't reach that standard until September 24th of 2010. So she's got to wait until that period anyway before she's seated. Both are obviously bright, very articulate, married with young children, with great personal stories. Coryell's father being sent to this country as a child from Cuba in the Cold War era Pedro Pan program that got children out of communist Cuba at that time. And Frances having run a bar and trucking company in Jamaica before coming to this country and graduating law school at Florida Coastal School of Law in Jacksonville. But, you know, equally important to DeSantis, though, is that they are members of the Federalist Society, the conservative legal fraternity that really prides itself on not legislating from the bench. They promote limited government, individual liberty. You know, all told, it's basically a thinly veiled Republican lawyer association. These are the fifth picks for the court that the governor has made in his short time in office, and all have been Federalist Society members. And in a state like Florida, with a Republican-controlled legislature and a Republican governor, we have a high court that is likely to look very favorable on decisions made by both. You know, whenever they get challenged by outside parties, there's a good chance that this the Federalist Society stacked court is going to be pretty compatible with the direction and policies of the Republican legislature and the Republican governor. So there you have the last branch of government in Republican hands, perhaps, in Florida.
Well, it's interesting, too. I mean, you mentioned a first-generation immigrant, a second-generation immigrant among these two picks are, and you know, three Hispanic justices on the court, one black justice. So I mean, there's a good diversity on the court right now, and these two picks do seem to really highlight the diversity in a state like Florida. Do you think DeSantis was very conscious of trying to maintain and expand the diversity on the court?
Yeah, I do think he was. I think he welcomes that look, and it's something that does carry a certain amount of resonance, you know, across the state. It's symbolically, it's a wonderful thing. You know, ideologically, I guess is maybe where there remain questions that, you know, do these people, does this court now ideologically reflect the thinking of a lot of Floridians that also are diverse? So I don't know. It's one of those, like, where the court is very much
so diversity of background, but not necessarily diversity of viewpoint.
Exactly.
All right. Well, at the same time DeSantis was touting his new court picks, he received some bad news about the state budget Tuesday. Tax revenue collections were down by nearly $900 million in April. The coronavirus shutdown was certain to trim some tax collections, but it's so remarkable that the state lost nearly $1 billion in just 1 month. Without a federal bailout, Florida's declining tax revenues could quickly wipe out reserves and force state officials to consider steep budget cuts. John, it was just a few months ago that lawmakers were touting increases in teacher pay and other new spending. Is that likely to get rolled back?
Well, Democrats in the House and Senate say they will defend the teacher pay raise and another one for state workers that was approved, along with other budget priorities, particularly in affordable housing funding and other favorites like the environment and local government needs. But the revenue shortfall caused by the coronavirus is serious, and just about everything in the budget likely is a target. Although, frankly, nothing is for certain with where things are headed right now with this spending plan for the next year. Democrats want the legislature to return in special session and start work on shrinking the spending plan for the budget year that's set to begin July 1st. But Republicans have so far rejected the idea. The legislature still has not sent the $93.2 billion budget proposal to the governor for his review, even though, you know, July 1st is getting close. Remember, the budget was approved in March before anything was locked down for the coronavirus. But with DeSantis fully engaged on all matters dealing with the pandemic, the legislators have been they basically off sending it to him, not wanting to distract. But it should happen fairly quickly now. But this week's report on tax collections showing that revenue was off almost $900 million from what was expected to be hand. What was expected to be on hand last month. That was really a stunner. And worse news is that the drop in collections reflect the month of March before things really started getting locked down. So the next month's report, which will show April collections, could be off even more than that almost $1 billion. So, what do legislators do? Republicans are holding their fire right now. They still seem to expect that Congress is going to steer more relief money toward the state and local governments, and they hope that they'll get more authority to spend the $4.6 billion that they have already gotten from the coronavirus relief package from the federal government, that somehow they'll be able to use some of that to help offset these revenue losses. There are reserves, about $3.9 billion, and DeSantis is expected to veto hundreds of millions of dollars from the budget also to save money. But the extent of this state budget shortfall is kind of an unknown right now. Republicans are optimistic that the state's slow reopening is going to bring back some more of the tax money that's needed to fund state government. But analysts also say that with unemployment rising in Florida and across the nation, that's going to cut into consumer spending, reducing sales taxes, which is the bulk of Florida's revenue. If Americans stay away from Florida hotels and attractions because they're out of work, well, that means even less money for state and local governments to run on. So just about everything is an unknown right now. It does seem that it would be crazy for DeSantis to sign into law a state budget that he knows he doesn't have the money to finance, but maybe that's part of the new normal. Approve a budget and just hope for the best. And if the money starts running out, maybe that's when you call the legislature back into special session to cut something, later in the year. Although this being an election year, any time that heads toward late summer or fall, that would not be a good time for re-election to be back in Tallahassee, cutting the budget and cutting state spending.
Well, one thing that could help Florida's budget, as you mentioned, John, is some federal relief money, but there's still a big dispute in Congress over whether to approve another relief bill. So we'll have to see how that plays out. Let's move on to some number picking. John, your number was 54,208. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, Zach, well, my number may need a little bit of a setup. Remember how this week the president has been so disdainful of states considering expanding vote by mail for the upcoming elections because of coronavirus concerns, of course. Trump has called vote by mail, quote, substantially fraudulent, even though, well, he voted by mail in the Florida presidential primary in March. But in our last big elections for governor and U.S. Senate in 2018, 54,208 more registered Republicans voted by mail than did Democrats. All told, 2.6 million Floridians cast their ballots by mail that year, about 30% of the electorate, with Republicans preferring a vote by mail over early voting, which Democrats had a slight edge in when it came to turnout. More Republicans than Democrats also voted by mail in Florida in 2016, when President Trump carried the state on his way to the White House. But the president seems intent on, clouding the whole issue of vote by mail as states look to expand this option for voters. Tactically, it looks like it's largely a concern that making it easier or more convenient to vote is going to turn out more Democrats, changing the calculus, I guess, on his reelection bid. And as Trump would see it, it could also be fertile ground for ballot shenanigans, in his view, although such fraud allegations seem more apocryphal than real. Of course, this being Florida, vote by mail, even though it's been going on here for years now, we do have a federal lawsuit underway where there's an effort to try to ease some of the state's ballot return deadlines and restrictions on who can collect and return vote by mail ballots to local election offices. The lawsuit has been filed by Democratic leaning public interest groups, and the state and the National Republican Party has intervened to argue against changing any of the Florida laws. So it's typical. Before we vote, let's fight about voting. I guess that's the way elections are held nowadays.
Well, John, in case our listeners were wondering if we coordinate these numbers ahead of time, we don't. And that will be obvious because my number was also an absentee ballot number. 2.7 million, that's the number of Floridians who voted by mail during the 2016 presidential election. As you mentioned, this has become a huge, huge issue nationally and here in Florida. I wrote about this last week and I talked to two supervisors of elections in this area, the one in Sarasota and the one in Manatee County. And both of them are saying, you know, they're encouraging vote by mail. They think it's great. You know, it's a safe, secure way to do it. So there's some dissonance there with the president's message and him saying that this is, you know, going to be rife with fraud. I think that they're feeling supervisors, I think, maybe are feeling a little annoyed that Trump is kind of going after vote by mail like this because, you know, they really see it as a way to, you know, get limit the lines at election day, limit the pressure on the polls. You know, they're struggling to recruit poll workers. I think locally they lost about 30% of their poll workers during the primary. So there's big questions about whether they're going to have the staff and the PPE to staff the polls in August and in November. Vote by mail could take some of that pressure off. It doesn't seem like there's any chance that Florida is going to go to all vote by mail for this election. The election supervisors aren't recommending that unless, you know, somehow there was a lawsuit that required that. But they are talking about sending out postcards to voters that are basically vote by mail sign up postcards so that people would be able to just check a box if they want to get their ballot in the mail and then send that postcard back. You know, no matter what, we're going to see a big increase in by mail this year in Florida, despite what the president is saying. Well, that wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our audio production team of Thomas Porti and Joseph Verzano. And thanks to all of you for listening. We're out of here.